Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
We're live. All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Hump Day Hangout. My name is Dan DeGrace. I am a retired firefighter. I've been 18 months now, and I got a co-host, Mr. Rob Fisher from Snohomish.
You're doing good at that.
Oh yeah, dude. I got it. Oh, I just messing with you.
I'm impressed because Chicago, Illinois.
Well, it doesn't take much to impress you. And we got a returning guest, our first returning guest, Captain Mike Galliano, And actually, I'm going to be part of the guest too, and I'm going to turn it over to Rob, let him introduce himself as he usually does, and let him introduce or ask us questions. Really, it's about the fire service and what happens when you transition out of the fire service. Who do you become? What happens? How is it? I didn't really think about it my first 28 years in the fire service. It really wasn't until a couple of my buddies started retiring. And so we thought it was a good discussion last time with Mike. We're actually going to, one of our next guests is going to be Pat Kenny. And he's in retirement now. So welcome to Straight Talk and my co-host, Rob Fisher. Chief Rob Fisher.
Thanks. Like Dan had said, this is, we did this show, the first part of the show in December 2020. And Mike and I are good buddies and he's a mentor, just the same, you know, Dan's a mentor of mine as well. And we had talked about some of the challenges, and this was more for me because, you know, I'm knocking on the door of retirement, and these two brothers of mine have retired and have been retired now for a couple of years. And so when we started putting this together, it was like, hey, what are some of those stumbling blocks? And if we tie that to behavioral health, as we get older, and you don't even have to be a firefighter, but as we get older, it becomes very challenging and suicide rates go up for, we'll say senior citizens. No dig on Dan there. But as we get older, the suicide rate goes up. And so what we want to do is we just want to talk about that transition from being firefighter, having a lot of a power, a lot of, you know, ability to be able to do some really crazy stuff. And then we go into this, we need to normalize and come into a regular world and be retired like everybody else. And that seems to be the challenge. And it's one of the things that has concerned me. So that was the beginning show, and we had a great show. I think we went for an hour and a half, which was about half an hour longer than we anticipated. And there was still a lot of stuff left on the table. And as Mike and I talked, he's like, man, we could talk some more. And I'm like, absolutely. Part two. It's just a matter of when we're going to do it. So, my good buddy here, Mike Galliano, 30 plus years in the fire service, mostly with Seattle Fire, retired out as a captain out of a very busy station in the north end of Seattle, which I don't know if we'll get into any of that, but that station's in transition now as well. Doing everything, author of books, is a rock star. Well, likes to be like a rock star. He's got those guitars behind him. Just an all around really good brother and somebody that shares a wealth of knowledge with the fire service. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, guys. Man, had a great time last time. I think we went an hour and a half, and at some point I think I got a message from one of you guys saying it's time for you to shut up. So I did. And yet now here we are again, back for another dose of pain. So
yeah. Well, hey,
the funny thing is I don't know if we talked about one fire story.
Yeah.
And really, that's the way it should be, is what does that look like going further? Not to take away from our experience, because as we came on, right, we wanted that first lead out, that first roof, that time when we can be a driver or an operator, maybe to aspire to be an officer. And then we blinked our eyes and I'm 18 months into retirement. And how many years for you now, Mike?
It's over three, you know, and heading towards 3.5, and it probably will be 10 before I blink, as fast as it's going. You know, I think everybody says that life, you know, life picks up as you get older. It certainly, for me, it's moving faster, I feel like, now that I'm out. It seems to be, anyway.
Yeah, what I'm going to offer, I'm going to let Bob ask a varied questions, but I've had a fair amount of people ask me that are close to retirement or just at retirement, and they're like, how is it? Because they don't know. And when people were asking me my first, 6 months prior, I go, I don't know. I'm not there yet. And I can tell you that there are some negative thoughts by people, like, hey, I'm going to lose my identity. I'm not going to be goal oriented. And my first question to people is, well, who are you? You know, when you became a firefighter, I became a firefighter in 89. I wasn't the same guy in 2000. I wasn't the same guy in 2010. I said, so I know for me, I had to identify who am I and what do I want to do going forward? Because as Rob mentioned, when I looked at, we're not here to talk about suicide, but for behavioral health, when I saw that out of the 60 members that died by suicide in my fire department in Chicago over the 30 years I was on the job, the average age was 54. And that's, I retired at 55. I'm like, man, but that's not even in my thought process. So does that mean it's going to come into my thought process? Does that mean that we're all going to think of that? And where am I going to go with my mental health? Kind of passing my one career. So that's a little thought. Rob, take it away.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to tell you, like, you know, as I opened, we started this with, this was more of a personal thing for me as I'm preparing for retirement. And some things have changed in my life in the last, since we did this show. My wife and I sold our downtown condo, and we're building a house in Vegas. While that's not out in the outdoors like Danny is, and where Mike lives here in Washington State, we're doing that because we're going to move near the kids and be near the granddaughters. And so it's in effect, it's happening. I'm thinking about it. I'm playing through it. I'm laying it out. I still, you know, guys are saying, hey, wait, when are you retiring? Cause I can retire next year. And I'm like, no, I'm not retiring next year. In fact, letters are due this week for retirement in our department. And there's a lot of letters coming in as there's a lot of change going on in my organization, but I'm in that, you know, I'm thinking of those next things, which is good. And this is what we want our listeners to be thinking, you know, cause we talked last show, we talked about the financials that has to be done. We, you know, that's the easy part, I think, is if you are in a decent organization with a decent pension system and you think through some of those things, you should be okay. But it's the other part. It's the, what am I going to do with my life? How am I going to be, you know, outside of the fire service? You know, am I an ex-firefighter or am I a retiree or those types of things? So it has changed for me in this, since our last show. And I appreciate the conversation that we had back then. Before we get really into it, okay, Mike, I got to ask you about, you're at home, you got your guitars on the wall. Those that don't know you, which I find that hard to believe, anybody that's listening to the show or watching it doesn't know you, but you're into rock music. So what was the last, at least give me the last two concerts, maybe three concerts you've been to now that we can go to concerts?
Oh, I wasn't expecting this. I guess it's timely. I just got back from the Dallas Fort Worth area doing some firefighter marriage training with Ann, and doing actually a firefighter air replenishment system demo with Grand Prairie Fire Department. They just Grand Prairie's right outside the airport, and Chief Fight and those guys, they adopted the FARS code and they got a system put in their tower. So we were doing that, showing how that works, and the media came in. That was a lot of fun. But I had a down day in there, which, you know what a down day typically means to me. Let's jam it up with something, right? You know, so a band I love called Blacktop Mojo was playing in a little biker club in the bad part of town. And so I just made some invites, and Paul Combs and I, fire service illustration guy, Paul Combs, we have always wanted to do a show together. We've had a couple attempts at it. We had, when we did the Fool's Thing here, when we talked the Fool's Thing, we had Greta Van Fleet was in town. Unfortunately, one of the 19 or 20 year old kids, whoever the drummer, sprained his wrist or something like that. I was like, give me a break. You know, I come in with 18 different sprains. It's like baseline, you know, step up. They canceled it. But anyway, Paul flew in. We invited Texas area firefighters. And so the very last one was Blacktop Mojo. My voice is still not all the way back from hooting and hollering at that thing. You know, because of what's going on in the area, things are a little tighter on concerts. I don't enjoy going to a concert with a mask on and, you know, screaming behind a mask. I mean, you know, you've seen me at a concert, you know, I've seen you, you know, we don't hold back, you know, we're howling at the moon. So I've only pretty much gone to outdoor concerts. I've seen Joan Jett, Billy Idol, and then Blacktop Mojo down in Texas. I do have tickets to see the Struts. And I just picked up tickets to see Ace Frehley at the historic Everett Theater, which I've never been to.
Wow.
But yeah, so that ought to be pretty fun. But that's sometime next year. But, yeah. Well, thanks for asking, man. You can see if you ever go to good quality instructional mentoring material on being able to talk in a promotional board, one of the best things I ever saw was a guy said, if you will think about things instead of just following some pre-prescribed checklist that you've memorized, but actually talk from your heart about, yeah, so there's the checklist, but now we're talking about a fire, or now we're talking about a personnel problem with somebody I love in my firehouse who's screwing up. If you will shift and talk from your heart, your voice elevates, your tone changes, your body language changes, you move more. And you can see when I talk about music, so anyway, yeah, thanks
for asking. And the Everett Theater, this is in, Mike and I live in the same state, so, but that Everett Theater, historic Everett Theater, had a major fire back in the days, I think it was in the 50s and 60s, which was a big fire. So just a little fire connection there with where you're going to be going. I don't want to get into this really deep, but I just want to, just, COVID is still out there, we're still dealing with it. You mentioned it with the concerts. Without getting into the political aspect of things, just what's the impact with you travel a lot, you're still teaching. You can talk a little bit about that. You and Ann are teaching. What is the impact on you as a retiree with COVID?
COVID's been, for people who do like we do, I think like Dan and I do, certainly Rob, like I'm anticipating you will do when you finally hang it up. And we spend a chunk of our time in retirement years doing instruction, or, you know, traveling and talking at conferences or going to see conferences or mentoring and those types of things. I probably had the busiest year of my life in 2019 and was well into repeating that, trying to figure out how to throttle it back a little to where I could actually feel, I wanted to spend time at the lake, you know, I didn't want to just be gone all the time. And careful what you wish for, because what was it? The end of March, 2020, I was in the Tri-Cities area with those guys. And it was the last class we did for probably 9-10 months. And then the door slammed shut and COVID hit. And interestingly enough, I saw Blacktop Mojo down in Seattle in a little club in Seattle. And so circle back around now, what, a year and a half later, I'm back to seeing them again. That's had a big hit. I mean, I'll tell you the worst thing about it, losing some travel time, losing some classes, those types of things, losing the income from it. You know, our pension plan, as you're aware, isn't all that great as far as like medical and everything. In Washington State, when you retire, you get no medical. You just basically get, what do we get? 2% a year or something like that, Rob, I think, and you're out the door. And so that medical bill, when it hits, you need to be prepared for that, because I don't know what it, what medical costs in other parts of the country, but I can tell you in Washington State, we're right at about $2,000 a month for the type of coverage that we had in Seattle Fire. Close. It's not quite as good as we had when I was on the job, and you got to figure out a way to pay for that. It's a big bite off of your pension thing. So, you know, I still have to work. I still enjoy working, and COVID rocked that world, you know, quite frankly. The worst part about COVID for the fire service is that we were already, I think, divided a bit in the nation politically. And COVID has certainly driven, you know, a bigger spike between firefighters, and in a way that I don't know that I could have ever fully anticipated. I'm watching it amongst my peers, and the division, the vitriol, the level of anger and acrimony that's being directed at fellow brothers and sisters. It's heartbreaking to watch it. And if I could give one, from my heart, this stuff it's going to go away at some point. We're not going to be talking about this in the way we're talking about it right now. We're just not. Our country has gone through plenty of these types of things. They just had a different name and they were a little bit different. But the words you're using right now, brothers and sisters, the things that you're saying are causing damage. And remember, it's just like even in a marriage or any relationship, man, be careful the words you use and the things you say in the tough times, because they have long-term damage. You do not forget those words. You do not forget the way people treat you when you're down. And I would just encourage my fellow brothers and sisters, have your beliefs. I have mine. I'm not going to back away from my beliefs. I never have. But there's a saying in the church that if you grow up in the faith community that I've always resonated with, because churches don't get along and faiths don't get along. And even within your own church, you don't get along. And one of the things that I've heard that I have written down is, you know, in the essential things, we should have unity. And professionally, there's some essentials that we should have. One of those is you are your brother and sister's keeper. You are responsible for them. Take care of them. Look out for them. It's not just every person for themselves. But in the essentials, have unity. In the things that aren't essential and where we can vary some, and there's gray area, and in this thing we're talking about now with COVID, there's a lot of gray. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. Have some, you know, be mellow about some of the places where you have some disagreement, and try to get on each other's side and at least have a little bit of grace. And on those areas where you can't agree, and you have charity, just have love, approach it with love and say, we disagree. But, you know, essentials, try to be as unified as you can. And the stuff that's not essential, rock on. Let people do what they want to do. And where we disagree, by all that's holy, man, try to have grace. Try to approach it with grace and not with vitriol. But that's the thing, Rob, that has changed, you know, quite a bit. And I know from a professional side, I talk to and counsel with and mentor folks all the time. I'm sure Dan can speak to this much clearer than I can. The uncertainty about our country that's going on, certainly the uncertainty of the things that are going on in firehouses, the uncertainty with personal health and knowing people that are affected, the loss of financial stuff, whether it be your job for a lot of volunteers, you know, paid firefighters typically aren't losing their jobs right now, although that may come here in the next month. But there's a ton of volunteers, the backbone of our fire service. They've lost their jobs. You know, they're going to the firehouse and they've lost their jobs. There's financial uncertainty. It has had a dramatic impact on what's going on in the family. And certainly for us retirees who are used to a high level of stuff that we can do, now you're more pinned at home. Now your job that you were thinking you were going to do, you don't have it anymore. And there's not as much for you to do. It has caused a lot of angst at home. And it's an interesting snapshot. I think as we talk about some of the things that are true about retirees, you'll see some of the answers are the same for the people now who are dramatically impacted by COVID, because you can't necessarily do what you want to do or be what you want to be about, if that translates.
Yeah. And this is a good opportunity for retirees to connect back and to mentor or be a part of the firefighter is still on the line because the whole point about having grace, and I've tried to stay out of the political side of things, You know, I got vaccinated early, and I did it for reasons so that I could, my daughter-in-law and son wanted, you know, they didn't want us to come around unless we were vaccinated. That's their choice. So if I want to play that game, that's the game I ended up playing. And my wife and I love to travel. So we made the choice to do that, but I'm not punching anybody in the face that's not getting vaccinated. And because that's not going to get you anywhere, right? It doesn't get you anywhere. The other thing you said in the conversation was early on, and it was, it seems like you're busier now than maybe you were when you were on the job. And that is a big concern for a lot of people. And I'll throw it over to Dan, because I know Dan we've had this conversation and he has said to me, I am busier now. But Dan, do you see that as being an issue, or do you feel like you're busier because you're trying to track these things to take up the space that you used to have with the fire department?
I'm not trying to fill the space. It's really a different busy. The busy before was work and getting up, going to bed, managing. I think when Mike was talking about it, and I think about my 2019, and I would go on anywhere from 18 to 25 calls a day, and then I'd come back, I'd try to go to the washroom, I'd get something to drink or another 16-ounce cup of coffee, and then I'd go back to the computer and look at my PowerPoints, I'd try to do a report, I'd go to meetings. It was that all day. And then I wondered why my system couldn't slow down and go to sleep, or I'd wake up four times in the middle of the night without it being a call. And then I would go home and I'd be exhausted. That was a routine for 7 years of working down in that area. I wouldn't change it for the world, but like you asked me now, somebody said the other day, and not that I'm looking young, but they saw a picture of me 7 years ago of today, and they go, holy crap, you look younger today, even though with less hair on my head but more on my face,
but very handsome, very things, handsome.
Things shift, and my energies have shifted where I should have done this a long time ago, and Mike talks about it with his spouse, and I'm sure with his family, and the thing that you do, and I've done this many times with individuals in the program that I work with, is that it's what is important to you. And my family was very important to me, but I didn't put it first. And now I try to, as my plate up in my head has all different things in there, I try to shift that and go, wife and kids. Yeah, I got to work and I got to do this, but wife and kids. We talk about self-care, but it was always about achieving. But it was achieving work and those types of goals. And we would always say family was important, but I didn't always put them first.
Yeah.
Or I didn't even ask. I'm like, hey, what's important to you? For me today, I would think, well, as a team, it's kind of like going on a, I tell newer battalion chiefs, if you go to a scene and you're the incident commander and you think you're the only one that knows what the frick is going on, quit, because you're an idiot. You don't have to have all the answers. You have to have the right people around you. Me, from a clinical world, when people say, hey, talk about the program. The program is the individual and all the people around there. The old adage of teaching, catching a fish for somebody and feed them for a day, or teaching them how to fish. And Mike alluded to the about emulating and mentoring people. And when I started in the field, people wanted to tell you what to do. And I gravitated to the people that didn't do that, but showed a continuous behavior in that. What we don't really do in the fire service, and that's why we're doing this and asking Mike, and then you're having me as being, you're asking the questions, is that we don't transition people into retirement well. Most of us in the Chicago Fire Department, I talked to a captain about this. He goes, there's no list of the 40 things you got to do before you retire. You find out as time goes on, and that's a bad SOP. You should have an SOP and go, okay, here, expect this, expect that, talk to so-and-so, talk to somebody that's retired, and have a agenda and a plan so we can mentor those people in that transition, because I don't look at this as an end. I really look at it as a beginning. And some people I've talked to look at it as an end. The thing that has benefited me, and I think maybe Mike as well, if you don't have something else, you're probably going to suck at this thing called retirement. And if you didn't plan it, don't be surprised if you strike out.
Yeah, you can't just be with the grandkids and, you know, and go golfing every single day. That's not going to work. It's got to be something more than that. In our last show, we talked about purpose, and you got to have some type of purpose outside of the fire service that is going to help you through whichever that is, right? And the easy thing, as we've said before, is the easy thing is the financial side. The union will step in and help you and organize up your finances, but the union, the department, the groups of retirees, I mean, this is a good program for retirees, is coming back and getting ready for the next wave of retirement to say, these are the things, you know, like your checklist. These are things that you need to be preparing for, because financial is different than emotional, in that we need to make sure that the emotional state leaving is ready.
Well, let me offer you this, and I might have said it last time, but when I looked at causes of death in the Chicago Fire Department over a 30-year period, I also looked at longevity in retirement. Back in the 90s and even in the 80s, the average number of years in retirement was like 3 years. They didn't have a retirement. And they didn't have masks back then. They drank a lot. They didn't, you know, all the stuff that we already know. Now we're seeing people live longer. We're seeing people leave earlier for a various number of different reasons. So my goal really, and I think I said this last time, and I'm sure we want to have a good 20, 30 years in retirement and not sitting in a chair, unable to do what we want to do. I could have stayed on another 8 years, but I'm like, man, how do I do these other things doing what I was doing when I had zero time. Yeah. So it's an adjustment. And now the last time I looked at longevity, the average life expectancy for somebody in the Chicago Fire Department was 11 years. That's still not good enough. So how are we taking care of ourselves throughout our career and into retirement so we can get to that 20 or 25 or 30 year mark?
Yeah. Our producer, Peter, just pushed up onto the chat one of the comments in Facebook. I think it's Rachel. And they said, organizing your daily agendas, you definitely can continue to be mentors to the next generations in teaching the fundamentals, objectives, and bring them to carry not just their legacy, but be able to build them stronger. And so thank you for watching and thank you for your comment on that, which leads into, you know, we're talking all about this and Mike, I never really got a chance, you know, I re-listened to our show and I never really got a chance to talk about like, who is Mike Galliano and, you know, outside of the fire service, because I think this goes to what Dan has taught, what we're talking about is, you know, if we don't have something that to lead us into retirement, if your entire life, which I'm going to admit, I think my 90% of my life has been about the fire service. This is why I think there's going to be a struggle. So when people talk about, or when I talk about Rob Fisher, it always has this identity of the fire service. And so I'm just curious, who is Mike Galliano other than the guy that likes to go to rock concerts?
You pretty much tapped the depths. There it is. You know, you got to it. That's me. let me make it brief. I don't know. I'm not sure people are all that interested in that, but I'll do it because you asked. Number one, Rachel, that was a wonderfully stated comment that you made, and way too sublime for a couple of retirees and a chief from Washington, man. So keep thinking deep thoughts and keep impacting the craft. I think I'm a relatively simple guy. I got to live my dreams in the fire service, guys. I really did. Thinking back to, I've actually had some time to really kind of go back and process, because I've just gone through a couple funerals for Seattle firefighters. One of my recruit school classmates just died about a month ago. First guy I actually ever talked to when I was sitting at the drill tower at station 14. When I came onto Seattle Fire, I got there early so I wouldn't be late and didn't know where the heck I was and all that. Willie Kabobot was there, and he was a captain from Hawaii who left the job there to come over and be with Seattle Fire. And he just died of cancer a month ago. And then I just literally raced back here from Texas to speak at the funeral for my friend, Rick Verlinda, who took his own life. So I'm confronting some of those things, looking back and appreciating the times that I spent with those guys and that. There's no other way to say it. I hope it doesn't sound cliche, but I've gotten to live my dreams in the fire service. Not all of them, but lots of them. And more than I think probably my talent level deserves, more than my acumen deserves, certainly. I'm got to go on rides and still continuing getting to go on rides that have me kind of out on the edge of my skill set, if you will, which is kind of fun. But I have lived my dreams. I married the girl of my dreams and have been blessed, you know, to have a wonderful marital relationship. And I've worked with some of the finest people you could ever imagine. I've had a wonderful family, and my health is good. What is there for, you know, me to really to complain about? I do want to qualify it, though. Things are not perfect in our world. And for those of you listening, I want you to know, we often don't talk about, at least publicly, we don't talk about a lot of the bad stuff because I don't want to bring people down. You know, you got enough problems of your own to listen to mine. If you want to hear about my problems or those things, we'll talk about them in the context of training, you know, to provide you some insights into how we handle them. But there's a reason I don't get on and whine and bitch and piss and moan about every little thing. It's mainly because I don't want to bring you down, and I've got too many things to be grateful for. But please know, and those of you that are struggling out there, Ann and I have got some things in our world that are, they're demoralizing, man, you know, just like you. I mean, trust me when I tell you, not everything has worked out wonderfully for us, whether you're talking about personally, health-wise, our family, our kids, our extended family. We got plenty of things going on. If you wanted me to articulate all of that, I think you would probably go, damn, that's terrible. It's living life. It's being a, you know, a normal human being. And it's a tough old world out there, and you don't get to control everything. It's like being at a fire, man. You draw it up the way you want it to go, and then the fire happens. And if you think you're going to control all of that, you're nuts, and you're going to be disillusioned. You have to adapt to what the emergency brings and what the men and women around you, however trained they are, how they approach the fire and the things they do, good and bad, you have to adjust. And that's the way life is. I love the fire service. I love Seattle Fire. I'm very discouraged about some of the things that are going on in the organization, but everything pretty much that I have professionally is because of Seattle Fire. I'll never be able to repay the debt to the men and women who created that great organization, who made it what it is, the people I work with and the people right now that are in there punching it out and delivering great service. So I'm about the fire service. I love talking about the fire service. I love being with people in the fire service. And I'm hoping I get to do some of that at least until the day I die. I love music. It's, you know, music and going to concerts is probably, I was talking to Paul about this. That's literally at the front row of a rock concert is the only time I ever get out of my head. It's the only time. Other than that, I think it must be a mental illness or something. My mind just never stops. And unfortunately, if it would just stay on one thing, that would be awesome. It doesn't do that. It, you know, jumps and moves. And I think it's why, candidly, I still sleep very poorly. But I love music. I love spending time with my family. I love being outdoors and where we live. Rob, we live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. Ann and I are hoping that we can stay here, you know, that we don't get chased out by the stuff that's going on in our region, but there's not a more beautiful place in the world. And if I could finish it with just the thing that turns me on more than anything, I love seeing people move from a place, from one level to another level that they never thought they could get to. I love seeing, whether it's in a training thing, whether it's in a leadership area, whether it's a role in the department or a place with their family that they never thought they could get to. At the end of the day, nothing fires me up more than that, watching people elevate and do cool things and make, I don't know, make progress, you know, in this life. That still fires me up as much as anything in life. So that's a snapshot, I guess.
Yeah.
Did that even remotely answer your question?
I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about Mike outside of the fire service. And I get it. And you're a grandfather and we've talked before, one of the best parts about being a grandparent. Yes, it's great to have grandkids and spoil them and have fun with the grandkids, but I love watching my son and the daughter-in-law deal with problems, and you kind of see your works in play, right? You know, yeah. You've raised your kid and you're hoping that they're going to be good, you know, productive individuals in society, and you're watching them take care of some of these challenges. So, he just popped off the screen. I was just going to say,
part of that where I wanted to go with this, because I know we're talking a little bit about retirement and people struggling. Just because we don't lead with the bad stuff and we're not constantly talking about all woe is me and here's where society did me wrong and here's where my parents screwed up. And when we were talking about raising kids in the book, Ann and I poured our heart and soul into our kids, trying to make them good citizens and to love God and to work hard and to be good neighbors and all of that. And what can get lost in that message is, well, so did we, and man, our kids are not doing good. And we wrote in the book, I have really close friends who I can tell you put every ounce of energy that Ann and I did into our kids, and their kids are in jail. Their kids have shot people. Their kids are on drugs. Their kids are abusive. Their kids ran away. I also have people whose kids are way more successful than my boys, have done things in life that are incredible, and everything in between. Just because the results of some of the things you've done as a parent or professionally or as a friend, those individuals chose a different course or life took them anywhere, in no way reflects on the fact that you poured your heart and soul into them, and you need to be proud about what you did do, and then you have to turn it over to them and let them live the lives they want to need. I have a guy coming to my mind right now. I'm not going to share the story about what happened to his child, but I can tell you did everything that any of you did with your kids that was positive and good, godly man. And if I told you the story about what happened with his daughter, it would break your heart, and it has broken their hearts. It in no way reflects the time, effort, and energy they put into. And I think coming to grips with the fact that I've done all I can to make this a positive outcome, and now it's on them, helps you to navigate it mentally to where you don't take it so personally, you start to do damaging things to yourself or to the other people around you.
So we should acknowledge the senior man in the room.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on there. I saw the ceiling, then I saw him, and then I didn't know if he was rolling with his computer, his iPad, whatever it is, Bobby.
A pair of fire engineering underwear popped up there.
No. I would have been on earlier, but I'm in the Chicago airport and I've been waiting for DeGrasse to pick me up. But as usual, he's like late. So, you know, or he's not going to show it all again, you know, come visit me. And then, you know, he stands you up, he's out of town or something. So it's always the same story with Dan. Much like Mike said, you know, you do your best with them, and then, you know, they can turn out like Dan. So, you know, you just got to roll with it. So it's just what it is. So yeah, I'm here in O'Hare. I apologize. I just got off the flight.
That's awesome.
So yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So great to hear you, Mike. And yeah, I agree with everything Mike just said. You know, it's fascinating. President Kennedy once said that success has 1,000 parents and failure is an orphan, which I think is, you know, you hear people all the time saying, "Oh, that person's a great person. They raised, you know, super great kids." I know super great people whose kids have just been train wrecks. You know what I mean? And I know train wrecks that have raised super great kids. You know, yeah. So it's at the end of the day, you know, the people that founded this nation really got it much more clearly than I think a lot of people in America today get it. Individualism, today they call it like intersectionality or whatever the hell, but individualism is individualism. You know, you can be given all the opportunities in life and squander them. You can be given nothing and just make the most of everything. And so, you know, it's a fascinating study. Sometimes I think the more privilege and the more affluence, or privilege in the sense of more access to things, more affluence and money and such, is not a good thing, you know, for a lot of young people. And then there's other people that just, you know, shocked the heck out of you, that were, you know, despite all the things they could have had for nothing, chose to earn things on their own and work hard and do things, great things with what they were given. So, you know, life's a wickedly complex deal. And just because somebody's in a really bad place right now doesn't mean that within seconds, you know, Saul on the road to Damascus. I mean, that's a story that the Bible gave us, God gave us intentionally, you know, that here's Saul, he's out killing Christians, looking to kill, you know, anybody who believed in Jesus. He's on a rampage. Right? You know, the Bible doesn't do justice to the historical records of how tough this guy was. And then boom, baby, you know, he's a believer. And I think that, you know, my mom used to say, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. So, you know, you just got to go with that. Right. And pray, you know, I don't have any qualms with saying, when all else fails, before all else fails, you should be praying, but just keep praying. And, it's fascinating. I was listening to R.C. Sproul this morning, and he was talking about how people have embraced serendipity, chance, randomness. And a lot of people say, you know, the universe was created by these random acts. And which is fascinating, because chance is not a thing, right? It's just a construct, right? So if it's nothing, it really can't influence anything. It's just it's a descriptive for something that you can't explain. So, you know, I'm glad we're on a forum where there's no judgment, but I really think that God's hands in everything that happens. And you hate to say that people's struggles were there, but they are, you know, everybody's different, you know, everybody's really, really different. Like if you really sat down with the four, is DeGrasse on with us? Cause I've only seen Mike and Rob. Did he bother to make it to his own?
Yeah, he's there.
I'm biting my tongue, Bobby.
Yeah. Right. There he is. So, I don't know. I think that there's, you know, you look at the work that Dan's doing with people who are struggling with tremendous issues. And a lot of the folks walk out of the places that Dan works in, you know, in Rosecrans and others, and their lives are transformed, you know, by just having somebody believe in them and help them to deal with, you know, the issues that they're going through. And sometimes it takes chemicals, you know, sometimes it takes, you know, drugs, and God bless the people who've made those wonderful things that help people get sleep that they need, or help them understand that, you know, the voices they're hearing in their heads aren't real. And there's real folks out there that are dealing with that stuff. I mean, and you know, you look at men like Dan, and I hate to blow sunshine up his pipe because we don't need his head to get any bigger than it already is. But when you look at the real professionals out there that are doing that work, you know, and I don't mean the self-aggrandizing nitwits who read one book on, you know, mental health and are suddenly experts. I mean, the real people in the trenches like Dan and the folks he works with every day that spend time with these people that are struggling. And that's incredible work. And I think that, to Mike's point, you know, I'm sure the parents that Dan has helped, that I know as a parent that Dan has helped, just find that to be incredibly reaffirming that there's good in the world, and Dan's a huge part in what he does with mental health is huge, incredibly important to the fire service and to the parents and loved ones of the people that he helps. So, and that's on a serious note, Dan. Every now and then, it's the blind squirrel theory. You do something right.
Well, I do appreciate that, Bobby. It yeah, it means a lot. But that goes along with kind of what we're talking about in a sense of how do we get to where we're at, and why we had Mike back on again, because the discussion about, you know, retirement doesn't happen by accident. It happens after 25, 30, 35 years of experiences, and we aspire to get into retirement, hopefully healthy, but not everybody makes it there. And then when you get into retirement, who helps you with that transition period? It's like, you know, being a parent and being a coach and being a firefighter, that doesn't happen by accident. There's a lot of accidents, but we have to train. That's why we push the fact of training once or twice a day, maybe more, in the fire service, so accidents don't happen, so that we can prevent line of duty deaths, so we can prevent heart disease and all the stuff that we already know and which you're pushing. But one of the reasons that Rob and I wanted to kind of have this conversation is if you look at the 35,000 fire departments across the country, mostly volunteer, and the struggles that are going on out there, let's just look at the fact of that there's a little over 1 million active members, and now people are living longer. We talked about the stats before, people weren't living longer. In our department, it was 3 to 11 years. Now, hopefully we'll have you, I think you have 10 or 15 years in semi-retirement in a different career. Mike is 3 years and going into four. I'm coming into two, but there's no classes on that. We have some side conversations, but we have to do better. And that's why we appreciated this platform that all ties into our financial health, our physical health, and our mental health, and how we get along with other people. One of the things that have saved me really by it, and this is somewhat purposeful, but also a little bit by accident, is I had two careers. I didn't end a career and just go into retirement. You have had the same thing. Mike has had the same thing. Rob has had the same thing. And the other career that I need to put first, which I think we all fall into, is family. We talk about it, but we don't put it first. I feel much better when and while we're doing this, I text my wife, hi. In my first 25 years in the fire service, I would only talk to her when I could. Now I'm intentional about that connection that I had lost with my kids, with the people that mattered. And I have to do that daily and I get that from the people that I work with in the program that I work with at Rosecrans. But that didn't come by accident. That came purposely.
I just texted my wife and she said, leave me alone. Does that count?
My wife,
you have to start with a smiley face, not a frowny face.
Yeah. You got to know your emojis. Come on. You know, my wife said, good luck on the show and tell everybody hi. So I got a question for the three of you, because you guys are all been retired, and in Bobby's case, retired maybe twice or.
You are saying retired, right?
Retired past tense. But do you find going to the firehouse is a good thing? You know, Dan's less than Bobby and Mike's kind of in the middle there. Is that a good thing to go back and visit? And you feel welcomed? Do you do it? If you don't do it, why don't you do it? I'll start with Mike.
Yeah, I go to firehouses all the time, mostly when I'm traveling. And then I go to area firehouses closer to me a little more than I go into Seattle, just because of distance and the city's different right now than what it was when I worked there. Interestingly, one of the last things I did right before COVID, everything shut down, I was at the firehouse talking to the guys. It was one of the last things I did. And then COVID hit. And I've probably been to a Seattle firehouse since COVID has happened maybe a couple times, but I've only been to the city into Seattle since COVID hit a couple times. So that's kind of why. But I know I still love being in the firehouse. Yeah, baby. I still love it. I love seeing the guys. I'll tell you, here's one of the things you have to deal with when you retire. I've only been gone 3 years, and I recognize there's an enormous turnover going on in Seattle Fire right now. But when I see pictures of the crews, they post pictures of like station this or that, I recognize one or two guys, and it's a bunch of people that I don't recognize, and it happened way, way faster than I ever expected. But I would encourage anybody who retires, I don't think you should live there. I don't think you should try to relive past glories. There is going to come a point, and I bet it would happen to me if I went to a firehouse somewhere in Seattle, at least one of them somewhere, where you're going to walk in the door and they're going to want to check your blood pressure because you just look like some other old dude, you know, who's off the street. It's almost like that Bruce Springsteen song, that Glory Days, you know. I hope when I get older, I don't sit around talking about it, but I probably will. And part of that is because it was so good. It was awesome. But there's a ton more to life than just living back with when you cut holes in a roof or, you know, when you were laying line. There's a lot more. So enjoy it in the dose that it should be enjoyed. Share what you have, because there's a lot of young people that, I mean, you know, I look at the three of you and the depth and breadth of knowledge that is available for folks out there to mentor is incredible. So that's a way to stay connected. But there's no way that I would ever want to be down at the firehouse, you know, every day, every other day, sitting there, you know, with the guys. They've got work to do. They've got their own lives and their own careers to do. And quite candidly, I think to be productive in this retirement phase, you've got to find other things where you can have an impact in life. I think we were created or we crawled out of the primordial soup with the wired in, whatever you folks believe. I think we were created to have impact.
And no, we were created. You had it right the first time.
Yeah. We were created to have impact. So that, Rob, that's the short answer. There's a longer one if you want it. But.
Well, I'll just say our producer, Peter, just said you got bonus points for the Bruce Springsteen reference, which I do appreciate. And the other thing is on this page, the Hump Day Hangout page, and when we got together this morning before the show went live, I was telling them, but Pat Kenny wrote an article, and it's on this page as a link related, and it's called "There's No Such Thing as an Ex-Firefighter Reaching Out to Retirees." And Pat's going to be, he's been on our show once before. He's going to be on a future show, but it's a great article to read. That's kind of alluding to this question about, you know, is it good to go to the fire station and how do you do that? If you are going to do that, I'll give it to Bobby. And do you visit the old firehouses?
Yeah, I do. I drop in mostly when I'm traveling, I drop into a lot of firehouses. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be at one tonight, and I love doing it. And I've gone back to Albuquerque and I've gone back to Coppell. I don't live in those towns any longer. So I drop in and I see those guys, and I love it, you know, because it's episodic, right? Yeah. You don't make a habit out of it, as Mike said. And I'll make an even better reference. I'll pull in the Eagles with, I saw a Deadhead sticker on a Cadillac. You can't go back. You can never go back. So there's incorporating the Grateful Dead in a song about the past is the past, right? And it's a foundation for a great future. And I think when one of the things that's cool when you go back is you talk to the young guys and gals around the table about what you're doing now, how fantastic it is, you know, to be in the next stage of your life, right? And I think there's tremendous value in that. And I think it's a lot of fun. And, you know, the old line, same circus, different clowns. You're like, you know, you hear the jokes and the stories and you'd swear you were there yesterday. You know what I mean? You even though they're talking to you about guys that you probably didn't, you aren't, like I left Albuquerque, gosh, it's almost 20 years ago and 18 years ago. And when the kids talk to me, when I visit there, and I was back there last year, I swear to God, I thought I was at some of the calls they were talking about. You know what I mean? And they were talking about stuff that happened last week, but I was like, I think I was there, you know, because it's this, you know, it's so our duties, we're tradesmen, and the work is fundamentally trades work. And so there's a continuity of activity and realities that don't change a whole lot, right? Which is cool, which is really, really cool. And then there's the, you know, the growth and the advance and how we do that trade work, which is, I think, wonderful. So, you know, I didn't mean to uproot Mike's apropos from Pete there with just a single rock and roll reference, but And how about that multiple? So Pete, come on, buddy. And listen, yeah, I apologize.
He hasn't responded yet.
I know, because he hates me. Pete hates me. So I got to run down to gate 16 and get on another aeroplane and go to another city. I'll be in Indianapolis tonight with Ernie Malone and a couple of my other buddies. Dave Rhodes is going to meet me there, and Brent Hollander and a bunch of guys. We're going to be looking at the hot program and figuring all that out. So if you've got a hot submission in there, we're looking at your work and over the next few days. And we'll be making those selections next week after we get done with our work this week in Indy. So thank you all for doing that. And if you're coming FDIC 2022, please, please, please book early, because it's already insanely crowded. So please, please, please book early. And to my good friend, Mike, thank you for being on today with these guys. Rob, it's always wonderful to see you. And
good to see you too.
I'm glad you're still surviving there in the urban jungle, and you're looking one good for it. Dan, what can I say? Yeah. Good talk, Dan. Good talk.
As always.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, make sure you buy something really expensive there to cover the taxes so it covers my pension there.
I did. I got a free Rice Krispies bar here in the Admirals Club. So I'll tell them to put it towards the DeGrasse family fund.
So Bobby, I'm in awe. I struggled to get my Zoom and my computer to work in my basement where everything's cool, and you're in the airport and it looks better than mine does. So I'm in awe. Hey, one thing you probably can't say, but I'll get punched in the face if I don't ask. I've had like 87 people ping me in the last 2 weeks. Hey, when are the announcements going to happen for FDIC classes? Do you have an update?
That's a great question. And the answer is
when I do Halton,
whenever Halton's lazy ass gets them finished, I think it's probably it's all because of me. And I got the classrooms pretty much wired, and those announcements are actually going to be rolling out pretty soon. Still working on the hot stuff, and I got the workshops pretty much nailed down. We had 1200 plus things to wade through. So I apologize. It took a little longer than I thought. So I would anticipate, give me 2 weeks, about 2 weeks. And no, Dan, you didn't make it again. So.
Yeah, I've been to Indianapolis too long. I was going to ask you what event you're talking about, because I'm not sure.
Now it feels like a firehouse.
There you go.
So the one thing to remember is that memories do suffer in the older years, as Dan is exhibiting right now.
Well, thanks.
All you need is a pair of aviators, and you're a perfect example.
Well, thanks for visiting with us, Bobby, and have a safe flight, and we'll chat at you in the future.
Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Love you, brother.
You know, and Bobby mentioned one thing, and he was talking about living in the past, which, you know, just the first thing I think about for retirees is like, I want to live those good old years, right? And, you know, I would say this is something that I'm working on is learn from the past, live in the present, consider the future, you know, and let those things move on. And so the visiting the firehouse, I could see where that could be more of a challenge. Dan, I didn't get an opportunity. Do you visit the firehouses?
I did twice to park in Chicago and to help other people that don't want to pay the $75 parking fee or get a $35 parking ticket on the meter. As Bobby said, I don't miss the circus. I miss the clowns. And if the clowns I want to see, I see in the serenity of Crystal Lake or in my place in Johnsburg or a drinking establishment. But when I do travel, I'm very humbled and look forward to an invitation to a firehouse. Most of them look about 100 years newer than the ones that I spent time in Chicago. So. Most of the guys I know and myself, we don't frequent the firehouses anymore, other than, like I said, when I travel.
Okay. Well, I know we're getting close to the hour mark, and I just got a couple more questions I just want to go through, and hopefully we can blast through them. And as long as Peter allows us, to he's giving me the yes, we can continue on. One of the things, you know, Mike, in our last show, we talked, you said, man, I could, there was a statement in our last show that you said, I could talk a full show about the many people who polished you or who are your mentors. And I just want to know, is there somebody that you can talk about or is there one person and what did they do for you that, that worked?
Yeah. So like I said, we could do the whole show. I have so many, it's hard. You gave me the question in advance. So I tell you, it's hard to like narrow it down because I feel like I'm leaving really good people out. Can I do two? Let me do one in Seattle and one in the broader context. You know, one of the coolest things that ever happened in Seattle Fire was I got a really good fire officer right out of the get-go, and he was a tough guy. His name was Jim Horn. Really, he was a tough guy. And I remember when I got assigned to Station 18 in Ballard, and they said, "Oh man, you're going to work with Lieutenant Horn. Whoo, he's hell on wheels with recruits." And you know, to an extent, that was true. But I don't know. A month into my probationary period, we were steelhead fishing together. So you know. Once he saw that I was serious about the craft and that I was going to take care of my business and own up to the countless mistakes that I made, it wasn't a problem. I asked him because I was amazed at how good he was at fires. I was amazed at how calm he was. And not everybody's calm, you know, and we had plenty of screamers in Seattle Fire that whatever was going on at the fire, you could barely tell because they were screaming on the radio, you know, and it was 10 times worse than I think it was. Man, he was just chill, very just dialed in. And I mean, things weren't even always going right, and he was dialed in. And I said, you know, Lieutenant, what, how do you do that? You know, and how do you make good decisions at fires? And how do you relax? I know it's experience-based, and the more experience you have, you know, but how, and I remember he said, and I hope this resonates. He said, Mikey, I don't know. I guess the first thing is just don't outsmart yourself. You know, don't outthink yourself. Don't outsmart yourself. And so I thought about that a lot, and he was so right. And it actually translates to a lot of things in life. You know, just don't outsmart yourself and think about so many different things. Deal with what's right in front of your face. You know, and then when you get more information, add that into the decision and deal with that instead of going to 87 different plans and whatever else, whether it's with a fire or with a personal relationship. Or the things you got going on in your head, the doubts and fears you have, don't outsmart yourself. And I started there, and I can tell you it has been the example set in loving the job and loving people. He loved people. He loved it, and he loved the craft. You know, he dug the craft, and he was into that. And it was just a really nice introduction to the way to be. Now, there were parts of his game that I would never adopt. True about everybody, right? But boy, that stuff was monumental, and it was influential in going down the right path and dealing with what's in front of you, not the 87 other things surrounding it, was huge to be able to focus. The art of go, no go, Rob, is a lot about that. You know, it's about dealing with what's in front of you. And then the other guy that was on the outside of Seattle Fire, Brunicini really impacted me. A lot, Alan did. And it mainly just came back to approaching things from a heart perspective. Promote, you know, instead of I'm like you guys, I'm type A, you know, see objective, run through wall to get to objective type of guy. And a lot can get lost along the way, and you can damage people along the way. You can be so intense and focused on what you want that a lot of things get left aside and you damage people along the way. And Brunicini was the first one leadership wise that put it into the service type of context in the fire service, and that we're about more than just putting out the fires, that we're about a whole bigger thing. And the way he would describe things, the compassion that the way he would describe things, and certainly he majored in mentoring, sharing what you have, not holding it in. Those two guys in particular, I think of the hundreds, maybe thousands, they rise to the top. I could give you a lot more, but for time, those were two.
Yeah. It goes back to the comment that Rachel made earlier on, and we're talking about mentoring, and we tie that back to retirement. You know, that's really what retirees, if you want to stay in the game somewhat, that's what you should be doing is mentoring, tying back to the organization and sharing your experiences and not reliving them, but just sharing those experiences for the future generations coming behind us.
Yeah. And one thing I would share, your old job is not all there is. There's a big old world out there, and a lot of people are going to leave the fire service when they retire, and they're not going to do fire stuff at all. That's great. You know, they're going to become fishing guides, or they're going to take on a second career and become, you know, attorneys, and they're going to, you know, some folks retired. They want to go just hang out with their family. They want to go spend time with the grandkids and do that. And rock on, you know, do the things that bring you peace, that bring you happiness. I would be lost, candidly, if I didn't have a few things that I could work-wise, professionally, that I could engage in. I would really be lost, and I would get grouchy, and the worst sides of my personality would come out. We talked a little bit about, I don't want to let it go, because I'm just dealing with a very close comrade of mine taking his own life. So if I could just, can I just dabble there just for a minute without, you know, bring for retirement. I want you to know, I feel loss of identity a bit, because I'm no longer this, whatever degree I was, a kick-ass captain, but I'm no longer in my mind anyway, this kick-ass truck captain up on a roof, coming in, cutting holes, trying to find people, all this stuff. I am no longer doing that. I can certainly say I had that history and I tried to do it at a high level, but I'm no longer doing that. I no longer have the crew around me that I did. You know, that those guys have all now, we were together for a long time. Now they're all going in different directions. One of them's retired, one's doing different, but I don't have those guys around me like that. Where we're sitting at the beanery table and busting chops, and you know kind of what to expect, and you get to blow off steam and all that. I have a very different, it's a different thing now. It's Ann and it's my friends, but it's different than the firehouse. I described to you, when I look at the job that I was on, I don't even recognize half the people now. They're moving. They moved past me from the day my coat went on the hook. I kid you not. They moved past me. I put my coat on the hook. I have a picture of it. I walked out of the firehouse. A buddy of mine took over the rig. And guess what happened? Alarms happened and the rig rolled out independent of Mike. They didn't need me to do a great job in Seattle Fire. And I already knew that intellectually, but it got affirmed there. The job went on. The job goes on without you. I fully understand, and those of you that are listening, I understand why the dark stuff sets in. I completely get it. I have never been at a point in my life where I've ever contemplated taking my own life or harming myself. But I certainly have been to a point where I wondered about it. I have certainly thought about it, what that would be like, or what you would do, those types of things. But I've been fortunate to never be there. I just want to affirm to you that what you were able to do in the fire service was amazing and incredible, and you should be grateful for it every day. And the things that you did that made you good at that are so desperately needed in our society. That skill set that you have, stuff that you did that made you a good firefighter, that gave you the guts and the courage to go into just hell holes and try to make it better for people, and to be at front bedside at people's worst day. Those of you that are listening that are retired, that stuff is desperately needed in our society right now. You don't have to be on a fire truck to do it. You do not have to be in a firehouse. It's needed in your neighborhood. It's needed in your schools. God help us. You can see in our towns and cities, thoughtful people who are not screaming at the top of their lungs, but have an acumen and a character and a service-oriented mind. It is so desperately needed. And those of you that are going down that path and feeling that all is lost, it's not. It's not. And you are You are needed. You are worthy. You've got a bank of experiences that nobody else has. And it is a way to fill that gap and fill that hole that the fire service has left behind. I think it's a way to fight off the demons that you have, the things you've witnessed and the stuff that has gone untaken care of. Rob, Dan, I'll tell you, the darker things that occur to me in my mind are always held at bay when I can find a way to help somebody else. It holds that stuff at bay. There is something about being able to help another person in whatever way that is, small and large, that pushes that stuff away, puts it in the place that it's supposed to be. And I just wanted to make sure that I got that out just to encourage retirees that are listening, because I just have gone through this. A good buddy who did as much as anybody for the fire service, as anybody as I know, couldn't overcome the demons and the loss and took his own life. And I'm just hoping, if you're listening to this and that's out there, certainly you have, you know, in Dan, one of the foremost resources for that type of thing. But your skill set, man, in our current, it's always been needed in our current state of affairs in this world, is desperately needed. And I think you will find peace there. You'll find help and peace. So thank you. Thank you guys for letting me say that.
Yeah. I'm going to turn it over to Dan. We're going to close up here. But once a helper, always a helper. And I think that really does. I mean, that's kind of why you get pulled to this. This is a calling, and some fall into this job, but a lot of us come in it as a calling, and it's a willingness to help. As cliche as it is, I like helping people. I really like helping people. Yeah. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel that there's a lot of purpose in what I'm doing and all that kind of stuff. Dan, we just got Mike sharing a personal experience and, you know, losing a brother to suicide. And I don't want to necessarily close out on this, but I'll let you, you're the professional. I'll let you have some final words there, and then we'll tie it up.
One, I appreciate Mike's time. I also appreciate your time, Rob. When Bobby asked me to talk about this topic, it's personal, it's touching, it's overwhelming. And who are going to be the people that have that conversation? I appreciate Mike's passion for all the things you are passionate about. And so very sorry for your close loss. And that close loss is a loss for all of us. And then we're just finding out also about, again, we've talked about line of duty deaths, and, you know, Dallas just experienced an incident, as probably many do in a given day, of close calls of Dallas had four firefighters caught in a gas explosion, civilians hurt. We know it's part of the job, but it doesn't remove the emotion that in the short and long-term physical and emotional effects that it has on the individual, on the people around them, on the incident commanders and the family. That's something that's why Bobby offers us an opportunity to talk about this stuff. And Mike, for you to be able to touch on, it's a continuum of suicide that doesn't happen overnight. From ideation or thoughts or a question or a concern to, you know, have an idea that you wanted, not you, but a person wants to do it, and then setting a plan and then putting that plan in action and actually attempt. It's like, you don't become a firefighter overnight, you become a firefighter over a career. The same thing with suicide and someone who has suicided. I continue to learn in this field, and I appreciate people like you that are willing to be vulnerable and have that conversation, because a lot of people will get stuck in their throat and be like, I probably shouldn't talk about this. But if we're thinking about it, everybody else is probably thinking about it too. And that's why we have this forum. So Mike, thanks for that. Keep doing what you're doing. I do appreciate when Bobby jumps on this as well and offers his insight, both from a professional standpoint. When he starts quoting people, that throws me off, but he probably won't watch this, because that's my, he's texted me afterwards and gave me a couple of shots. So that's my shot at him, because I can't remember what I just said. But I appreciate the personal thing that he does, which isn't something that he has done in the past. But if we don't model a certain behavior, how do we expect the next person to do something or do better? So for everybody that's listened and stayed with us, retirement doesn't happen by accident. We'll be back here in a couple of months in December, and probably either have Pat Kenny or somebody else, just like Mike, that will give us some insight into their journey of whatever we're talking about. So, Rob, great seeing you again.
Always great to see you, Danny. And Mike, thanks for your time. And give Ann my love. You guys have a great time over in Spokane. Drive safe. And Dan, have a good conference. You're doing some other work. So I appreciate both of you brothers. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.